All right, so we're in Daniel chapter 2. We're going to be finishing up this chapter, Lord willing, and I'm going to try very hard. So I'll be moving a little bit quickly, a lot quicker than I normally do. But if you remember, we started off the book where Daniel was really part of a royal and noble family, and he was extracted right out of Jerusalem. He was taken out of his homeland, and then what I believe he was castrated. I believe that he was made to be a eunuch, to dwell with the eunuchs. I imagine that this young man would have had a lot to be angry about and to fight against. And yet we see this maturity, this incredible maturity in this young man, Daniel, and his three friends as well. But there was something dynamic happening, something where the Holy Spirit was moving upon his heart. And what we want to do is, and we've tried to do this, we've slowed down, we've taken a look. What did Daniel do? What was so good about what he was doing? We've tried to pull those things out. And so we saw that he was just bold. He made a stand. He didn't want to eat the king's delicacies, the wines and the fatty foods. And he had a kosher meal that God had said, here's what I want you to do. Here's how I want you to obey me, and I want you to watch it with your diet. And so he went to the chief of the eunuchs, if you remember, in Daniel 1, and said, I don't want to eat this. And he says, give me 10 days. So they switched his diet. They agreed, just water and vegetables, and he ate that way. And then he and his three buddies looked greater than everybody else. That was pretty much chapter 1. We came into chapter 2, and we saw the king had some dreams that were all connected, and they troubled him. They bothered him. And so he challenged his wisest men, the best minds, the greatest minds in Babylon, in his kingdom and his empire, and he pulls them all together, and he says, listen, tell me what I dreamt, and then interpret it. Totally backwards to the way that normally it is when you bring those people who specialize, these greatest minds. This is what they did. What they would do is they would go and they'd say, here's my dream, now interpret it. So three times these wise men of Babylon came back to King Nebuchadnezzar and said, you're going to have to tell us the dream. And he says, I'm not going to do that. It's too easy. And they said, you tell us the dream and then we'll give you the interpretation. And they had large books, really complicated books to use on that. He sends this order. You see, after you refuse the king, you should never refuse the king. They did it three times. And so he sends an order to an executioner. He says, get all the wise men of Babylon and slay them. Kill them. And so Daniel, when they get to Daniel, Arioch, this executioner, comes to Daniel. He says, Daniel goes, what's going on? Why the urgency? Why are you so upset? What is the king doing? What's going on? And Arioch says, listen, they can't give the king the dream, the details of the dream and the interpretation. And so we're going to kill you. And Daniel says, wait a second. And Daniel boldly goes to the king. Listen, that's another thing. If you guys don't understand this, oh, there's so much here. If you don't know this about the king, you didn't approach the king without some sort of bold welcome. We know that there's, in the book of Hebrews, it talks about there's a scepter that is lowered. God has a scepter. Every king had a scepter. And before you walked on that sea of glass, that marble, before you approached the throne of any king, you'd have to wait for the scepter to be lowered. And that's why Hebrews 4 says, we've got a bold welcome entrance. Come on in, all of you. God has already lowered the scepter. We can come in freely to him now. But in that culture, if you just walked on that sea of glass, that marble before the throne, you'd be struck dead if he didn't give you the authority, the authorization, please come forward. And so you have to understand when you're reading these things, it's not like just going before a president and you've got Secret Service and they're watching you. I mean, you'll be struck dead if you had the boldness to go. And Daniel boldly goes to King Nebuchadnezzar and says, can you give me a little bit of time? And the king agrees. And you remember we studied last week, he went and got his three buddies and said, we got to be praying. And so they had this prayer party. They began interceding and seeking the Lord. And then at the very end, the beginning of verse 19, the end of our study, Daniel gets a vision and God gives him the revelation. So what did Daniel do? How did he respond? Look at verse 19, the second part of verse 19. It says, so Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel breaks forth in praise. And he's praising the one true living God, the God that you and I serve. Not some faulty God, not some statue in a corner of a house. He's the one true living God. Daniel blesses him. He breaks forth in praise, and you can understand why. At this big requirement that the king said, you give me the details and then give me the interpretation. And Daniel and all the other wise men said, we can't do it. This is not a human feat. You're asking what is impossible, but Daniel said, but I know one who can. I've got a counselor in Jesus Christ, and he'll give me the revelation. And so with Daniel's neck on the line and him being given this revelation, he breaks forth in songs of praise and words of worship, and rightly so. A big request from the king, but a big request to God. A simple thing for God, but it's a big request in Daniel's eyes. And so he praises him. And then we go to verses 20 through 23. And what is going on in Daniel's life? He answers and he says, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. And I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers, you have given me wisdom and might, and now have made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's demand. Incredible insight. There's a depth of insight in Daniel that is beyond his years. He begins praising God. Listen, I want you to understand this. He's got the answer. The natural response of man would be, I'm going to run and go give it to the king. I'm going to get this out of as soon as possible. But I just want to show you this. There's incredible insight, incredible maturity in Daniel that we need to glean from. Daniel, before he runs with the answer to the king, he stops and he says, I got to praise God. I've got to worship him here in this place. And I got to tell him what I appreciate about him. Listen, this didn't take very long. But it was an eruption from our hearts. I want to make sure that I'm extremely clear about this. I shared on Wednesday, and I could have just spent the whole, I could do a whole study, and we will do a whole study at some point, but I spent a lot of time on Wednesday night talking about how worship precedes spiritual battle and how God gives us victory. There shouldn't be any talking during worship. A little, and that's it, but there should be, this is a time for you to have an opportunity to worship the Lord. And I said on Wednesday, listen, I know that I'm raising the shepherd's staff, and I know this can be uncomfortable, but I'm telling you the truth. As a shepherd, I'm watching out for the congregation. You and I need to realize how important worship is. And I confess to you that there were years where I would, and I said this on Wednesday, I'll say it again. I confess to you that there were years where I would try and angle my time so I came on the last song, maybe the last song and a half, so I could just reduce the amount of time for worship because I thought it was a waste of time. Now, if you had asked me that, I'd say, no, it's not a waste of time. I just didn't want to invest myself. I didn't want to get there and sing, and I didn't want to lift my hands, and I didn't want to bow down. I didn't want to worship God. I just wanted the Word. I love the Word of God. And then at a certain point, God began moving upon Pastor Brian's heart. I shared this on Wednesday night. And he began moving on Pastor Brian's heart. And for a year and a half, he just taught on worship. And I learned to worship God. And I learned the value of it. And I still don't worship him like I should. There's still things to learn. But I'm telling you this for your own good. For the well-being of our congregation is that there should be worship. And it doesn't take very long. I know, listen, sometimes I come in late. I need to be the leader. This should be echoing with the people on Wednesday night, what you heard on Wednesday night, but I didn't plan on spending this much time, but I'm telling you this. If you don't know the value of worship, start studying it and stay tuned because we're going to do a Wednesday night series and we're going to do worship and we're going to hone in on it. It won't be very long, maybe 3-4 weeks. We're going to focus on worship. Why is worship so critical? And we bouncing off of Wednesday night, listen, it precedes battle. Your victory in spiritual warfare takes place because worship precedes. And it's, as Psalm 22:3 says, he's enthroned. He dwells. He's on his throne in your heart when worship is coming. Now, you might not be comfortable lifting your hands. You should. You should grow in that. You might not be comfortable. You might not be comfortable bending, you know, bowing your knee and bending before the Lord. But there needs to be some sort of growth and some sort of desire to say, God, you are worthy. Whether your neck is on the line or not. So I as a shepherd, there are times, and you guys are going to get this at times, I'm a pretty gentle leader, but there are times I'm going to stand up and say, as a congregation, we need to be worshiping inside and out. Don't stay in the foyer just because it gives you an opportunity to talk. You will never, when you get to heaven, you and I will never, ever, ever regret the times that we spent worshiping our God. In fact, that's one of only a couple things we're going to do in heaven. Are you with me? You want to talk about bringing heaven to earth? It's worship. So, now back to the study. That is part of the study. But Daniel, he just says, God, you're worthy of all. Look, I can't believe this, God. You've given me the answer. I knew you were capable. And then he begins talking and he's praising him for these things which are directly connected to the things that are the subject of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and that God controls the time. God controls the kingdoms. God is in absolute control. You're a sovereign God. I'll try and share these things as we go along, but do you know how good of a topic that is to praise the Lord for? Faithfulness, I love God's faithfulness. That causes me, he's faithful, I'm not. And so you have to understand how me, when I worship, I love to sing about his faithfulness. God, thank you that you take care of me, even though I don't deserve it. I don't know if it was this morning, Monica had a song of worship on, and it was talking, you worship leaders could tell me this, but it was talking about, help me when I don't lift my hands to you. Like, I know that, I don't know, I'm bad with lyrics. I know that I should be lifting my hands to you, but help me to understand the sacrifice you made, even when I don't lift my hands to you. You guys know what I'm talking about. And it's just, it's so true. God, I don't worship you like I should, and you're so worthy. And so Daniel's coming in and he's just saying, God, you're worthy of this. You're telling me all this. You're explaining all this to me. And you didn't have to. You could have just, it would have been perfectly fine for Daniel to have died, because he would have been taken up into heaven, into God's presence. But God didn't have that for him. And he shares. And so Daniel begins sharing with him. And he says to the Lord, he says, you're awesome, God. You are the best. You're the best, God. Church, when was the last time that you and I said to God, you're awesome, you are the best, there is no one like you, I am so glad that you saved me, I'm so glad that you chose me? There has to be a point in time, listen, for wherever, we're all at different areas in our walks, but there has to be something at a certain point in time where our hearts learn the eruption into worship, where you break through and you say, God, I love you. I worship you. You are beautiful. You are holy. You are majestic. And you just begin praising him for the things that he has done in your life and the things that he is. And so Daniel's coming from that perspective. Now we go down to verses 24 through 49. And there's going to be, we've gone from the challenge that Nebuchadnezzar gave to the counselor in God to now the communication that Daniel's going to share. Look at verses 24 and 25. He says this, therefore Daniel went to Arioch. Remember, Arioch's the executioner, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and he said thus to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation. Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation. So we see in 24, in the beginning of verse 25, there's an urgency. There's an urgency from Daniel. Now listen, he's taking care of the most important thing. His priority was to worship God. Amen? Now he's got this urgency, and he goes to Arioch and he says, listen, don't destroy the wise men of Babylon. I want you to understand this. It could be framed by Daniel to Arioch. Listen, I've got the interpretation. My buddies and I, we pleaded with God for the interpretation and the details. You can go ahead and kill the rest of these wise guys. But he doesn't do that. I want you to understand this because it presents the believer with an opportunity for one of the most powerful witnesses that we can have. And that is when we watch out for people who don't know the Lord. By this, all men will know that you're my disciples for the love that you have for one another. Love people. Is it Christ's heart to love people? Then love people. And when they're evil and sinister, you love them in the name of Christ, in the love of Christ. And Daniel comes in, he says, he didn't say, don't destroy me and my three buddies. He says, don't destroy the wise men of Babylon. What a powerful way to evangelize, to preserve life. It speaks volumes to the non-believer. You guys see this word destroy? there in verse 24. It says, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. This word destroy in the Hebrew is abad. Abad. It means to perish, to vanish, to be exterminated or put to death. And so Daniel was saying, wait, Arioch, killing these wise men is a bad idea. I know. It's a delay. I was really serious. Now I'm coming with a joke. How can you do that? You're like bipolar preacher today, right? Really serious. Worship God. And by the way, a bad idea, right? I know. But it's good. This is a good joke, right? It's as good as it gets here. You are listening. You should have seen the delay. Like, I'm like giving you guys time. It's like, thank you. Wait, Arioch, don't kill the wise men. It's a bad idea. Don't destroy them, right? So how does Arioch respond? Quickly, just like Daniel. Look at verse 25. So it says, then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king. He just brings him. One of two things is happening. Either Arioch didn't want to kill all the wise men, or he wanted to share this information. I believe it's the latter rather than the former. And so we go from urgency to unity, verse 25. Look at now Arioch, how he responds. He brings Daniel before the king, and he says thus to him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation. He says, I have found a man. Arioch takes credit. Most people want to take credit when things happen. Believers, non-believers, the fact is everybody wants to be part of the winning team, right? But listen, we need to understand we're already on the winning team. When we get to the book of Revelation, just go ahead and read the end and you'll see we already are on the winning team. I got this in here. At a certain point, there's going to be a transition in our world. It's not this way right now. It's anti-God. But at a certain point, there will be. I don't know when. At a certain point, there's going to be a transition. The wind's going to blow from being persecuting Christians and making fun of them and not tolerating them and judging them and to a full sweep. And it's when this life doesn't work out the way that man wants it to, there's going to be a full sweep. And you're going to see Hollywood. I'll just pick on Hollywood because they are like reeds in the wind. Whatever is most popular, what by and large, this is a generalization, right? At a certain point, Hollywood will then switch over and go, you know, I see now the wisdom to this. And I think it's in my best interest that I now consider being a Christian. And you'll just see. It's going to be a radical. As soon as it's not cool to be in the world, there's going to be a switch. Everybody wants to be on the winning team. So I just want to throw out this to you. What's happening in Daniel's life? I want to throw it out to you before we go to the next few verses. Put yourself in a position to be used by God in powerful ways and give him the glory. And you know what you do? Just enjoy the ride as much as possible. There's a faucet principle I want to share with you, a faucet. You know what happens when you do, you open up the faucet? You know the faucet outside you hook your hose up to? As soon as you open up, water begins flowing, right? When it comes to our Christianity, when it comes to God giving us things, just open the faucet and just let it go. When he gives you something, share it. Don't hold anything back, just let it go. When you do that, you'll see that the Lord will begin flowing through you in new ways. And you'll say, not my will, but your will be done. So Daniel, in verses 26 through 28, he now is going to guard the inspiration. So look at verse 26. It says, the king answered, and he said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? So he's keying in on the clarification. He's saying, listen, Daniel, you said you wanted more time. Now you're coming into me saying you have the interpretation, right? Do you have the details? And Daniel says, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. And so verse 27, Daniel answers in the presence of the king, and he says, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. In other words, no man's going to give you the answer, but I've got it. None of your wise men, none of the greatest minds in Babylon are going to give you the answer. So he's knocking the counselors. What he's doing right now is he is setting himself apart. This is an Old Testament. This is a New Testament principle that Christians, believers in God, must be set apart. We should look different. We should act different. We should handle life differently. And when we do that, and when we give credit to the one who deserves the full recognition, there's absolutely no limit for what God can do. Are you guys with me? I remember going to youth pastors conferences and hearing Pastor Chuck. He would come in and almost without fail, he taught the same message every single time. And he just, one of his points was, God will use you however much you want to be used. If you only want to use this much and you only give this much of your life up, then he's only going to use you. He's a gentleman. He's not going to force himself. But if you want to do more, he'll use you to that point. If you want to do more, he'll use you to that point. And there's just a truth to it. If you just lay your life down, you do that faucet principle, and you just say, God, I'm going to be consecrated to you. Whatever you want to do with me, he'll use you. And so verse 28 comes in and says, but there is a God in heaven. Daniel speaking to Nebuchadnezzar. There's a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. So now he's keeping the context. He's staying right within it. Truth be told, there is absolutely no such thing as a secret to God. Are you guys with me? There is no such thing that God doesn't know. There's no secret. If you're writing notes, if you're taking notes down, Hebrews 4:13 says everything is naked. Everything is open and bare before God. There's no secrets to him. You can't hide anything from him. And then he begins opening up to Daniel and he says, listen, here's what it's all about. The things that will take place in the latter days, your dream and your visions on your bed were these. And then we go into verses 29 through 35. Now Daniel's going to give the information. I told you we'd be moving quicker today. So he starts off and he makes a distinction. Daniel's going to make a distinction in verses 29 and 30. He says, as for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who made known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. So he comes in, he says, listen, there's a future given. Two key things I want you to notice in verse 29. He says, what will come after this and what will be. He's describing to the king, here's what you were dreaming about. Here's what was flowing through your mind. The things that will take place after this and the things which will be. The future. He's talking about the future. He's saying, Nebuchadnezzar, God gave you a glimpse of the future, and I'm gonna explain it in just a minute is what he's saying. And then he humbly comes in. He talks about the function in verse 30, and he says, listen, I don't have greater wisdom than anybody. Nobody on this earth, but God has given this to me. You know what I find is that people who have an incredible gift, by and large, most people, when they've got an amazing gift of intelligence or performance, you know what? A lot of times they're very humble about it. It's the people that aren't very good at something. If they're just a little bit better than average, those people are some of the most arrogant people in the world. But the people who are really skilled, you know what? They recognize there's something of a gifting taking place. They might not acknowledge God as the one who has gifted them, but there is some sort of humility that takes place. And so Daniel is being given all this, and granted, we understand the context. He just got done pleading with God, and now he's coming in and he's saying, listen, it's God who delivered this. If you're taking notes, and I want you to at least mentally take notes on this, do this with Isaiah 42:8 and Isaiah 48:11. Both of these verses say, I will share my glory with no one. God says in these verses, my glory I will not give to another. Listen, if there's one of these principles that we just have to thread into our study that I want you to pull away, listen, when you're given something of some dynamic gift or some insight, don't take glory for it. Be humble about it. God will not share his glory with you. If you do take glory, you're on dangerous ground. And normally I would like to flesh this out. This one is very visual. I'd love to really flesh this out, but for the sake of time, I want to get through the chapter. Listen, if you're taking notes, Acts 12:23. There was a guy who was a king. His name was Herod. And he was arrayed in all of his kingly attire, sitting on his throne, and he began speaking, and all the people said, oh, the voice of the gods. You're the man. You're like God himself. And he just received it. He said, yeah, that's right. I'm smooth. Listen to my voice. It is like God. And the Bible says in verse 23 that an angel came and struck him dead. Listen, very important, I don't have time to really build this out, but in that same verse it says that worms began eating his body. And if you look at the timing and the way that this verse is kind of framed up, again, this would be kind of interesting. Worms ate his body and he died. That's the way the verse ends. Worms ate his body and he died. Can you imagine being eaten alive by a bunch of worms? I don't know what kind of worms they were, but it must have. What is the flesh-eating virus? Is it Ebola or something? Ebola? Or, I don't know. You guys are with me, but the fleshing, we're talking about something that just was just eating him alive and struck him down dead. Listen, you do not take God's glory. So Daniel's about ready to give all of this information to the king, but he's rightly placing the recognition where it belongs, and that is with the God of heaven. So what will Daniel share with the king? Look at verses 31 through 35. He says, "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome." This image, now he's telling him, this is what you were dreaming about. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thigh of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron and the clay and the bronze and the silver and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Listen, this is what he dreamt. And Daniel is telling him, this is exactly what you, these are the details. This is what you dreamt. Church, this is the ABCs of Bible prophecy. If you want to understand the other passages in Scripture, you have to understand this because it gives us the backbone to understand all these other places. It's a chronology of some human events, really of world kingdoms from the time of Nebuchadnezzar, from the time that Jerusalem was taken captive till the time of Jesus Christ. That's the time, and it gives you, and it lays it out period by period, empire by empire. There's more here, but look at verses 36 through 45. Everybody understand, you just got a glimpse of what he was dreaming about. Now he's going to explain it. And I will do my best. If you're taking notes, and I encourage you to have your notes out. If you're not good at taking notes and you're a better listener, shoot me an email and I'll send you my notes. And it's all laid out. And I, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to you about looking at the portions of this, the governments, the values, and then finally the dating of these different world empires. So we'll go through this quickly. So verses 36 through 45 says this. "This is the dream, Nebuchadnezzar. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings. For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, and the birds of the of heaven, he has given them into your hand, and he has made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. But after you shall arise another kingdom, inferior to yours. Then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as the iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others. Whereas you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it, just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of the kings of the God of heaven, And in the days of the kings of the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, and it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure." So again, I'm telling you guys, he's giving the interpretation now. He talked about the details of it. Now he's giving the interpretation. I just want to quickly go through it, and I'm going to tell you about this. The portions of the structure. The head is of gold. Verse 32 tells us the chest and the arms, they're silver. You've got sides and a belly of bronze. You got legs of iron. And then feet that are partly iron and partly clay. And then finally, the greatest empire is going to be a stone that's cut without hands. It exists and always has existed. It's Jesus Christ. And it's going to crush all of them, make them like chaff, and they're going to blow away. Here's the governments, so you guys can understand this. The head of gold is Babylon. And he just got done telling him, King Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to be the king of the gold part of the structure. It's Babylon. Babylon was ruled. Listen, as we talk about this, and we're going to talk about all these different functions of this structure, I want you to understand everything gets less and less and less and less until God comes on the scene. So when we talk about governments and it being a Babylonian government, this Babylonian government was ruled by a dictator. It was absolute monarchy. He ruled, and he ruled heavily. It was very, very strong. Herodotus, the Greek historian, said that he visited Babylon. He wrote about visiting Babylon 90 years after Nebuchadnezzar had died, and he wrote about how he saw tremendous amounts of gold scattered throughout the city. He said you'd walk down the streets and you would see everything lined and paved with gold. And so it appears as though King Nebuchadnezzar really took it to his head and said, you know, I am the king of gold. And he began saying, anybody who's going to come to my city is going to see, look at all these gold things that I'm the king of gold. It's important that we'd understand when we look at verses 37 and 38, Daniel's telling him, listen, you're getting this power only because God's given it to you. We've talked about this before, but listen, promotion only comes from God. Man can do their elections and everything. God is in absolute control. And so when people get elected to office, it's fully within his control. He's sovereign. He doesn't cast a vote, but he's the one who controls it. So we go from the first part, the head of gold, we go to a chest and arms of silver. This is the Medo-Persian Empire. This is where you had a king working with princes and they established laws. Listen, when we get later in the book, we're going to talk more about the Medo-Persian Empire, and you're going to see it's less of a strong government. We'll get there shortly. Stay with me. So we got a head of gold, chest and arms of silver. We've got sides and a belly of bronze or brass. This is the Grecian Empire. This was a government ruled by a king and an army. Who was a great Greek leader? Alexander. Yeah. You'll see him. He's going to come in Daniel chapter 7. It's pretty amazing. We go on to the next one. Verse 40 talks about the legs of iron. This is the Roman government. It was supposed to be a republic, but it was actually a rule of military laws. We're going to see that this Roman government was split into two. It's going to have two legs. This happened later on in history. Rome had an eastern and a western division. It had two different sides. And so then we come to verses 41 through 43, and I know we're going quickly, but I'm giving you guys just high-level details so we can understand all of this without getting too in-depth. But we see verses 41 through 43 is the revived Roman Empire. The revived Roman Empire is one that had iron, where it had laws and it had justice, but it also had clay, and so it had like a democracy, and they don't mix. You can't put these two together. Clay and iron don't go together, and so it made it brittle. It was strong, but it was also very brittle, and it's human nature to reject the strengths of it, which is the laws. We're going to go into this later on when we get into Daniel 4 and Daniel 7. Listen, are you guys paying attention? From those two legs, there's going to be 10 toes, and from the 10 toes, there's going to be 3 toes that will emerge. And from the 3 toes, there will be one that will emerge, and that will be the Antichrist, the big horn. When we get to Daniel 7, we're going to talk about it. I'm telling you, this is absolutely foundational. I'm just giving you this. Listen, there have been superpowers that have come along, but there has not been a world empire since. We've had Hitler. He sought to have a world empire. He failed. Stalin, Mussolini, Napoleon. All of these guys have tried to have superpower or world powers, but the best they could be was a superpower. There's not been a world power since. When we get to We'll see how more of this fits. But our world is absolutely, it's the iron clay that's mixed right now. It's a revived Roman Empire that's just, it's messed up right now. And this world is longing for real leadership. And I hope that when we get to Daniel 7, you'll have a better grasp of this and understand this. But we're going to see the world is hungry for one leader right now because we can't solve problems. Listen, our country, we've got liberals, we've got conservatives. They are absolutely polar opposites. And we are a divided nation right now. We need leadership. We need God. We need a theocracy. But there's going to be one who's going to stand up and he's going to be eloquent. Again, we're going to get into this in Daniel 7. He's going to be eloquent. He's going to speak very amazing, where he's going to be an incredible orator. And the world will say, that's who we've been waiting for. And it's going to set up Revelation 13 where he says, I'm God. He's going to sit on the throne in Jerusalem and say, I'm God, worship me. It's all being set up. But this is all foundational. You have to understand the feet go to 10 toes, go to 3 toes, go to 1 toe, the Antichrist. We're going to get more into that later. So from this vision, the Lord is going to make a substantial jump into the future in verses 44 and 45. And he says, and in the days of the kings of the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, and it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without having hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, and the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and the interpretation is certain. The stone cut without hands, this is none other than Jesus Christ. He's the stone. In Matthew 21:44, it says that the stone will fall. And if you're a believer, you'll fall on the stone. But if you're a non-believer, the stone will fall on you. And it says, if it falls on you, it will grind you to powder. You're doomed. You're nothing. You'll return back to dust. But if you fall, you'll be broken. But if you fall on the rock, Jesus Christ, you'll be saved. There's something about the rock. There's something about the stone. If you remember this, the stone that was in the wilderness, and God said to Moses, I want you to strike the rock. And he struck the rock, and then living water came out. Remember that? And then the people were complaining, we don't have any water, we don't have any water, we're upset, we can't eat anything, take us back to Egypt. And Moses goes, I'm frustrated. And God says, just speak to the rock. And then he went in and he struck the rock, and God says, sorry, Moses, you overstepped your boundaries. The rock was to be struck once because it talks about Jesus Christ. The stone, the rock was struck once up on the cross. After that, we just speak to him. He's already been crucified. And so he stepped outside the boundary that God had given to him. So there was a stone that followed them, right? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4 says that it was that rock that followed them in the wilderness. There's a stone of stumbling for the unbeliever. Whenever in the scriptures, whenever a stone is representing anyone, it always represents Christ. There are other stones. You can look up stone. You can go to your thesaurus or your concordance, and you'll find stone throughout the passages of scripture, throughout the verses. However, whenever it speaks of a person, the stone always speaks of Christ. He is the stone of our salvation. So now I want to share with you the values of the structures, just so you understand the values. There's a lot of values here. Again, this is a picture of world history. First, its weight. You notice that it's top heavy. Gold, silver, bronze, iron and clay. It's top heavy. It diminishes in weight. It's easy to push over. When we look at the stone cut without hands, it's heavy. It's solid. It can't be cut. It can't be moved. It's solid in its structure. Its weight. The value of it, it decreases from gold to iron and clay. It just keeps diminishing in its value. Its beauty and its glory goes from being gold to iron and clay. You guys with me so far? It's pretty straightforward, right? You guys, I'm just pointing out these real simple truths. Its strength, it lessens from gold to clay. But then when we come in this stone can't be broken. It's strong forever. I like Daniel's last statement here in verse 45. He says, the dream is certain and its interpretation is sure. This is final. There's no greater weight. There's no greater wealth. There's no greater beauty and glory, and there's no greater strength. It is the stone. It is Jesus Christ. That is what man, listen, people don't realize it in this world, but that's what man is crying out for. That's what man is hungry for. That is the leader. And that's why the Antichrist is going to rise up. And he's going to speak incredible words, and people are going to say, finally, here's a guy who's got all the solutions to all of our problems. He's going to blend people. He's going to have a peace treaty. We'll get to more of that later. Before we go to the last group of verses, I want to talk to you about the dating of the structure. If you're interested in the history of things, I know some people like the history. The Babylonian Empire was conquered by the Medes and the Persians in 536 BC. The Medo-Persians were conquered by the Grecians in 330 BC. The Grecian Empire was conquered by the Romans in 65 BC. The Roman Empire was conquered about 476 AD. It was split in 364. Remember the Eastern and the Western? And the revived Roman Empire, we're in progress. We'll get into more of this later, okay? I just want to kind of whet your appetite a little bit. 10 toes, right? I think it was 1952, 1950, I can't remember. But we had the ECC. A lot of biblical prophecy experts believe that the ECC, the European Common Community, I think that's what it is, but ECC is what it stands for, or what its acronym is, right? They got the 10 toes, 10 different nations. It's kind of fluctuated up and down, but that's where it started, with the Big Ten. Very, very interesting. And it's coming out of that Roman era area. So we'll get into more of this. We'll try and tie things in. It's a little bit speculation, but it's good speculation. I think it's fairly certain, but we'll take a look at the Antichrist. We'll look at these different nations when we get into Daniel chapter 7, and we'll see how everything begins to fit and work out. So the truth is Jesus is coming back. I don't know when he's coming back. Crystal Lewis sang a song. I don't know if I know the name of the song, but it's "People Get Ready, Jesus is Coming. Soon we'll be going home," right? Remember that? That Harvest Crusades? Yeah. Cool, yeah. Yeah, it was a good, I liked hearing her sing that. But we have to be ready. So are you ready? Are you ready for Christ to come back? Before we go to the last verses here, 46 through 49, and we finish up chapter 2, which, again, it's a miracle that we've gotten through almost 30 verses today. We need to make sure that we understand these verses and grasp the layout, the structure, because it's going to help us through the book of Daniel and into the book of Revelation. Head of gold, arms of silver, belly and sides of bronze, legs of iron, feet of clay and iron, right? Okay. Make sure you understand that. It'll help us when we go into our next study. So let's finish up very, very quickly. Daniel gets the increase in verses 46 through 49. Verse 46 says, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face prostrate before Daniel and commanded that they should present an offering and an incense to him." So here's the impact that Jesus has. And that King Nebuchadnezzar was so impacted that he fell on his face before God and he began worshiping him. And it's amazing that a king could so quickly, he knew there's no one who could give you this interpretation. You must be serving the God of gods, the King of kings, the Lord of kings. And so, and look at verse 47, we see the identification. The king answered Daniel, and he said, "Truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and the revealer of secrets, since you could reveal the secret. Nobody else had it, but you did, because you're God. You gave credit, rightly so. And your God is the God of gods. Your God is the Lord of kings. Your God is the revealer of secrets." Before we go to the last two verses, I want to draw your attention to one key word in verse 47. Listen to the way he addresses Daniel's God. He says, "Truly, your God." Do you guys see that? I just want to pull this out. Now, he's humbling himself before this God of heaven, right? And he's acknowledging that there's no other but this God, but he has not given his life to the Lord. I really firmly believe, and we're going to get into this, Daniel chapter 4, we're going to get into this. When we see Nebuchadnezzar, this man will be humbled. God is going to humble this man. And I believe when I get to heaven, I'm going to see King Nebuchadnezzar. So, some people I'm not so sure about in Scripture. This man, I'm pretty sure that we're going to see him, because he really comes around. But here he's saying, "Truly your God." It's not my God. "Truly our God." "Truly your God, Daniel, is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of secrets." And so we come to the last thing. There's increase for those who trust Jesus. There's increase that comes. Verses 48 and 49 says, then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over the wise men of Babylon. So Daniel gets promoted. He's given many gifts. He's given much authority. He's now the authority overall. He's what, 19 years of age, 17 years of age? I think he's 17 years of age. He's a young man. And all of these wise men that have been serving in the kingdom for a long time, now he's the chief administrator of them. I'm pretty sure that all these wise men were not too happy with this decision by the king. Just, it builds into the story later in the book of Daniel, but I just want you to understand what's happening here. He's given this authority. Daniel wisely wants to surround himself with people. A good leader, a smart leader, will surround himself with people, especially with gifts that he doesn't have, that she doesn't have. And so Daniel says in verse 49, he petitioned the king. Again, what a bold move. King, can I ask you for another thing? Thank you for all your gifts. Thank you for the authority you've given me. Can I ask you for something else? He says, could you set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon? But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. He was in the court of really the leadership, but he put these people around him, supporting him. Listen, it's good to put, we talked about this last week, it's good to be supported. We talked about this on Wednesday night. When it comes to spiritual battles, it's good to be surrounded by people. That's why you come here and you say, listen, I'm hurting and I need prayer. This is why we have our prayer chain. This is why we're to grow together, because you can't do it alone. Don't isolate yourself. It's foolishness. Next week is Easter. The following week, we're going to be in Daniel 3 looking at the fiery furnace. Another miraculous thing where God is just honoring. Listen, God honors those who honor him. Isn't that a promise that we've already been studying about? This is the one that keeps coming up through the book of Daniel. 1 Samuel 2:30. The book of Daniel is pointing out this truth, is that God honors those who honor him. Let's go ahead and pray.